when it is like life or death, we will come through. I could not muster up any of the strength, the motivation. I was in my head, not a moment sooner than seeing those four judges on the side of the pool waiting to judge my dive, was I able to actually attempt the dive for the very first time. Hey yo, busy brain. Welcome to my podcast. I am Camden Hainsworth, ADHD advocate, coach, and member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Understanding my own ADHD diagnosis completely changed the course of my life for the better. Now it is my mission and joy to provide you with the tools to do the same. Join me weekly. Let's create real results that work with your neurodivergence and reflect a confident life of self-acceptance, growth, and satisfaction. Welcome to the Busy Brain Saint podcast. Let's get growing. Hello, you made it. I'm so happy that you're here. My brain is busy and my heart is full. Today's episode is titled Interest-Based Brain. I was thinking about how we read about Isaiah in 1 Nephi. And this week in Sunday school, we were talking about Nephi's situation. Imagine that you and your next door neighbor, for me, it's our friends, the Andersons. Let's imagine that our two families were commanded to build a boat, to cross the sea, and we landed upon a land that we couldn't see any remnants of any other civilizations around us anywhere. And we had to multiply, we had to have kids, we had to build our own homes, we had to go hunt, we had to become farmers. And the only entertainment, books, whatever it might be, that we had was the Old Testament. And this was the brass plates that they got from Laban. Imagine what you might do. I'm sure that you'd maybe learn how to jump rope. You'd come up with other fun games to play. You'd learn something like jacks or, you know, other kinds of games that I can't even imagine right now. But you didn't have YouTube. You didn't have your iPad. You didn't even necessarily have Velcro. You'd have like the simple things that we just take for granted in our life. It was just you and these two families and, kind of life as you know it into the future. And I think about Nephi, and this past week we read in 2 Nephi chapter 4, and he talks about how he glories in the scriptures. And in the scriptures is where he finds his testimony of God. And the scriptures for him was the Old Testament. And then I think about all of that time that he had on his hands, and how much time he had to be in the Word of God. And then when he is given the opportunity to write his own testimony down in the gold plates, that he then starts to tell us about how much he loves Isaiah. And I thought about why that might be. And I put on my ADHD lens and I said, well, I bet Isaiah was kind of fun. It was kind of creative. Isaiah forced him to exercise different muscles in his brain than other scriptures did, than other stories did. When you read about Moses and you read about him as a baby and then growing up in the kingdom and then leading the children of Israel out of Egypt, and that whole saga, it's very linear. It's very story-esque. And then you get to Isaiah, and it seems like things don't always follow a story format. Isaiah teaches us so much about Jesus Christ as the Savior of the world, about his love, about his mission, and prophesying of his coming as the Messiah. And yet it's not always spelled out so clearly. There's a lot of symbolism. There's a lot of room for pondering and dot-to-dot mentalities and making connections. And I wonder if that was fun for Nephi, having the only book really that we know of that he could read during that time being the Old Testament. I wonder if he was able to hyper-focus on that particular element and the Spirit taught him things that weren't on the page, but then made sense through the context of how he believed in God, how his own experiences were with seeing angels and being delivered out of the hands of his enemies and having a really dysfunctional family that didn't want him around, even when he was following the prophet and following the Lord. I'm sure that there were parts of Isaiah that he really could relate with, and because it wasn't such a linear read, that the Spirit was able to fill in parts of his journey that required more of him, that challenged him, that it was almost like a competition, almost like a game to him as to what am I going to learn today through the words of Isaiah. And it's no wonder that he invites us as the readers now in the latter days to go into Isaiah 2. He said, "You guys, this was so fun. This was amazing. Of course, all of the scriptures are great, but when you go into Isaiah, new things are revealed to you in beautiful new ways through the Holy Ghost and through personal revelation." And I loved that thought. It helped me think about how with ADHD, we have this interest-based brain. And in order for us to get things done, most of the time we have to feel motivated, or we think we have to feel motivated. And we're only motivated by things that get priority. And the only things that are priority are the things that interest us. And that's why it feels so difficult to do things that we're really not interested in, because compared to a neurotypical brain, they will all of a sudden develop motivation if it is priority, even if they're not interested in it. So for example, it's not that my husband really loves to take the car to go get the oil changed, for example, or it's not that he really loves to scrub the sink, the kitchen sink. But if it gets to a point where he, number one, can see that it's priority to scrub the kitchen sink or go change the oil, the very fact that it makes its way to the top of the priority list all of a sudden increases the motivation juice inside of his body. And so then he's able to fulfill that action. He's able to go to Jiffy Lube or wherever he goes to get the oil changed, or he's able to scrub the kitchen sink because intrinsically his body says, this is top priority. All right, let's get motivated and let's do it. An ADHD brain doesn't work that way. An ADHD brain can say, okay, this is priority, and still say, and it's not interesting, so I'm going to go do the things that are more interesting to me. It doesn't care that it's a priority. Now, does it help if there is priority? Absolutely. Does it help to maybe calm the chaos and all the other noise in our brain when we know what comes first, or when we can constrain down to a couple tasks? Of course. But that takes coaching. That takes some purposeful deciding. And that does not come naturally programmed in the body. That has to come from an extrinsic motivation, an extrinsic system, or step-by-step process that we go through in order to get ourselves into motion. And that's what I work a lot on with my clientele, is number one, to figure out why something feels unmotivating, why something is not getting done. So we look at the navigate underneath the action itself and figure out what's happening in our body, where the emotions lie, what the thoughts are that are attached to that action. And then once we get more clear on that, it makes it easier for us to know how we can set up an outside system in order to nurture the part that we just really don't like. I think I may have brought this up last week, but I didn't want to do the dishes. And once I worked backwards, I realized it was because I didn't want to get my long sleeves all wet and it was a chilly, rainy day. And so once I recognized that, I knew that if I kept my jacket on and I kept the temperature in my house at the same temperature, it was a little bit cold, that I would not get the dishes done. But getting really clear on where my motivation was lacking, having to do with my long sleeve shirt and the temperature of my house, I then increased the temperature of my house and I went and changed my clothes. And so then I was warm and I wasn't going to get my sleeves wet, which is like a sensory nightmare. And I was able to then accomplish the task of doing the dishes. That was an extrinsic way. That was an outside of my body way to set myself up for more success. Whereas with my husband, he would automatically jump in as a neurotypical and say, dishes have the priority. They're going to get done. I'll roll up my sleeves or I'll naturally do what I need to do in order to get the dishes done. So this kind of blows my mind because I'm always amazed at how naturally people have these abilities inside of their body in their out-of-box programming just to get things done. And it's no wonder that they seem so confused when they tell us, well, just do it. Just get the thing done. Just, you know, rally up all of your energy and motivation and get the thing done. Stop being lazy. Stop being, defensive or defiant. And we're sitting here thinking, I'm not being defensive or defiant. I literally can't will myself to do this the same way that you can. So there are four factors that can really help with increasing motivation. Number one is interest. Number two is competition. Number three is novelty. And number four is urgency. Okay, the podcast had already been recorded and I had to come in and tell you this hilarious story because I was a diver in high school. So as a young kid, I did gymnastics for a number of years and got good enough to do backflips and roundoffs and all the things, back halves, trampoline routines, etc. But in high school, I took all of those things that I had learned younger, as you know, or earlier in life, and I joined the dive team, and there was one dive that was called a reverse, and I got in my head so much about doing this reverse. Essentially, you approach the diving board, you push yourself off, you jump off with your face forward, but then you dive backward into the water. And some people call it a gainer, I think, as well. But the technical term was a reverse. And I was so freaked out that I was going to bonk my head, that I was going to slap my back on the water. At this point, I had massive PTSD from some sports injuries I had from soccer. And I could not get out of my head. And I was on JV. And so progressively, as you're learning the different dives, each dive meet that comes after that, you add on a new dive. And so by the time we were about 6 weeks in to the season, I needed to know my reverse. And I still hadn't gotten it. I was just chickening out all of the practices. I could not get it done. But I would have been completely disqualified from the dive meet and wouldn't have had any chance of going to like the semifinals or the end of the year, what are those leagues? CIF is what it was called in California. If I disqualified myself by not doing the dive. And so I had to muster all of my strength. And this is when I remember the urgency of having to learn how to do this dive just flooded me with adrenaline, with dopamine, with adrenal, whatever was happening. And I remember doing my approach to the end of the diving board, pushing my hand super far back as I bent my knees and really sprung that diving board down super deep and just flying off of that diving board super high in the sky and then doing my best to kick my feet up in the air and push my head backwards so that I could at least look like I was attempting to get in the right position. And it was the closest to an attempt I have ever done. But I, you know, kicked my feet a lot more horizontal than I did up straight to the sky and ended up not a back flop that I can remember, but more of just like a really ugly dive. And I got at least zeros. At least they scored it to keep me qualified. I don't know if that was the technical term, but I got enough points that I wasn't disqualified. And so I was able to go compete in league and stuff. I think I ended up taking third or something. I'd never dived before. So dove before. Anyway, really funny story that came to mind tonight that is a perfect representation of when we have urgency, when it is like life or death, we will come through. But not a moment sooner. Like I could not muster up any of the strength, the motivation. I was in my head. Not a moment sooner than seeing those four judges on the side of the pool with their numbers in hand waiting to judge my dive was I able to actually finally attempt the dive for the very first time. We need to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Accessibility to coaching is really important to me, financially, as well as the right kind of coaching. When I was introduced to personal development, it was through the lens of a neurotypical mind. And while it was extremely helpful, it pushed me to levels that were not always healthy for me because I was not working with my brain. So creating a ADHD group coaching program that worked with the ADHD brain and had that as the default was number one, really important to me. Number two was finances. When I looked across the board at how much it would cost to get support for coaching and really good support, where people felt like they were seen, it was individualized, they were able to uncover aspects of themselves that they never saw were there. They weren't just given tips and tricks that were thrown at them, but they were learning how to create systems and structures in their life to benefit their particular challenges with ADHD. That's what I wanted to create, but at a price point that wouldn't break the bank for as many people as possible. And so I created Mindful, and I hope that you join us. Mindful is an incredible resource, not only financially, but also with coaching. I have dedicated my life to ADHD coaching for 4 years now. And previous to that, I was an educator. I feel very confident, and I know that it is my calling to be in front of you. I have worked with hundreds of one-on-one clients over the years. I get you. I'm here to help you understand your brain with a community of people that are like you. Join us, CamdenADHDCoaching.com/mindful. I'll see you so soon. So Lori Dupart is a ADHD coach that some of my friends were trained under. And she has a great quote. It says, "People with ADHD need to learn to tap into the meaning, importance, and worth of the task at hand. The key to putting the meaning back in motivation is to let go of the way that it works for anybody else." I really appreciate this quote, because it's exactly the work that I do. We learn to tap into the meaning, importance, and worth. So why isn't this important? Why don't I care? Why is my body telling me that this isn't priority? Or why is my body telling me to not do this task? So once we get clear on that, once again, just like the doing the dishes, the long sleeve shirt, we're able to figure out the solutions. And we can expect that we will not get the thing done until something has changed. If somebody texted me and said, "Hey, I'm coming over in 20 minutes, and I knew that we wanted to make food in my kitchen, and there was a sink full of dishes, what has happened there? The competition, the novelty, the urgency has shifted, and so therefore my motivation can go higher. So something externally is going to have to change and shift in order for my motivation to increase with the things that I just don't care about. Whereas, once again, I'm going to reemphasize, with a neurotypical brain, if it is priority, it will automatically receive more motivation. So having an interest-based nervous system can be really tricky, and it can feel very strange when you look around at people that seem to just be able to get things done. This can even go, honestly, I've seen it with neurodivergence, go the opposite way. Of doing fun tasks, of doing jovial tasks, of doing play tasks, that if it doesn't have some kind of reward or purpose outside of just being fun and being novel and being happy, then some neurodivergents find it really difficult to schedule that in or to feel like that would ever be important. They have a hard time seeing that by being playful, they actually become a more well-balanced human and show up more appropriately as themselves. So I like this, once again, bringing it back to Nephi and studying the brass plates, because it was really clear that he loved the scriptures, that he gloried in them, that he was excited to tell his kids about the Old Testament and the prophecies about Jesus Christ, because, or the Messiah, because he loved it so much. And I also wonder if his interest shifted at some point. You know, I just like to play. I'm not saying that he did, but I wonder if it became less novel over time to read the same scriptures that he had, the one book that he had over and over and over again. And reading Isaiah increased that novelty because it, like I mentioned before, it allowed him to exercise different muscles in his brain to figure things out a little bit differently, to involve communication and prayer with the Lord a little bit differently. And, you know, I like to think about that, because you and I, as we are studying scriptures, as we are, you know, as Psalm 139:14 says, as we know that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, and the works of God are marvelous. That how is God using our wonderfully made-ness in order for us to learn more about him and then to teach more about his ways. Careful that as we are digging into the gospel, that we don't attach our achievement and our motivation and our unmotivatedness to have anything to do with who we are as a human, with our worth. You know, the worth of souls is great in the sight of God, and we are his children. And first and foremost, that's the most important. Jacob had a lot of anxiety. And in 2 Nephi, oh shoot, I'm going to forget it. Let me see if I have it written down. I do. 2 Nephi 6, Jacob is speaking. He says, I speak unto you again, for I am desirous for the welfare of your souls. Yea, mine anxiety is great for you, and ye yourselves know that it ever has been. For I have exhorted you with all diligence, and I have taught you the words of my father, Lehi, and I have spoken unto you concerning the things which are written from the creation of the world. Jacob experienced anxiety. He talks about his anxiety a ton. I learned this from Brother Halverson. So much. And it's interesting to notice how Lehi speaks to Jacob with such kindness. And in 2 Nephi 2, he speaks to him about the plan of salvation and about the role of the Redeemer, that we don't have to be perfect in order to be saved, that we are saved in the midst of needing to repent and being imperfect. And that's exactly why Adam and Eve fell. It's exactly why we have the transgression that happened that separated us from God, is so that we can learn and grow, and so that we can utilize the atonement of Jesus Christ in our lives. It's not that we need to be perfect first and then Jesus steps in. It's that Jesus stepped in as the number one reason for God's plan for us, and knowing that this is how we would grow and learn. And so if we get so hyper-focused on needing to be perfect, and I've seen missionaries and friends of mine do this, especially when I see people coming home from missions and their life as a normal civilian feels a little bit different when they're not dedicating every moment of every day to representing Jesus Christ and the church, right? It feels strange. It feels different. And I mean, literally, I may be in the scriptures 20 or 30 minutes a day if I'm lucky. And that compared to teaching and preaching and studying for like 12 to 13 hours a day can feel kind of like a letdown. And so a lot of missionaries, as they're coming home, they want so much to have that closeness to God that they err on the side of going a little bit too far, and they end up neglecting some of their other life. I didn't have that problem. I felt like I left it all out on the field on my mission, and I was ready for the next chapter of my life. It was so hard, and I had nothing left to give. And I was like, yep, I am done. I am finished. I am ready. Let me come home and let me, you know, get back to college, back with my friends, start dating again. I was ready to go. But I can understand that desire if you have felt like the need to be that close to God. Maybe you hadn't felt that close before, or maybe you're unwilling to be flexible with how God speaks to you, doing it under such a full-time nature versus not. Maybe the same thing when you get released from a really important calling. Maybe the same thing when you're an empty nester. When these transitions in your life happen and it feels different, we sometimes overcompensate to a degree that we just need to be aware of scrupulosity. Scrupulosity is a physical disorder, psychological disorder, primarily characterized by pathological guilt or obsession associated with moral or religious issues that is often accompanied by compulsive or moral or religious observance and is highly distressing and maladaptive. It's unhealthy. We don't want to make sure that our interest in the scriptures and like our desire to feel close to God and to feel safe in the scriptures and the words prevent us from actually living our life, which is exactly God's plan for us, is to get out there and live. He doesn't need us to be hermits in in our own, well, that's maybe not the greatest word to use, especially for my Catholic friends that truly become hermits, but he doesn't expect each one of us to just stay to ourselves all the time. I believe that he wants us to learn about him, learn about the gospel so we can go and spread his light. And if we're so concerned about making mistakes and not going out in the world that we are just like pigeonholed into one thing for an entirety of our life, when do we ever get to actually apply what we're learning? And so we just need to be careful that if the gospel becomes our hyperfocus, that we balance it out with other great things too. I think that's far and few between, but sometimes the way that we talk about the need for the Spirit or the need for the gospel can kind of come across that way, that if we don't have it, that if we're, you know, making unrighteous decisions or imperfect decisions, even in the smallest ways, that we are distancing ourselves from God. And for an anxious person or for a dysregulated person, that might induce a lot of fear. And I want to just kind of put your soul to calm right now and let you know that from my perspective, I think God would rather have you get out there with, you know, the 20 minutes of scripture study or the 20 minutes of worship that you can do, and then get out in the world and go help the rest of his sons and daughters in the world. I love where this is going. We're going to take a quick break and come right back. So before COVID happened, I loved to throw parties. I loved to be social. I got out there. I put myself out there. I was completely blind to the fact that I had ADHD and that I suffered from things like rejection sensitivity and from burnout. And so I just put everything out on the field. I have learned to rein that in a little bit, but I think I've actually swung my pendulum a little bit too far. And so this is why I have chosen to partner with Mom University. Mom University is a 3-day retreat for mothers that's happening in San Diego, where I grew up, on April 25th to the 27th. And during the month of February, they have a promotion going that's a BOGO half off. So you can come, you can bring a friend, and your friend can come for half off. So essentially, both of you coming together saves you about $100. So the mom skills that you never learned in school, how to balance your time for you and for your time for your family, how to get organized and to be more efficient with your to-do lists, how to be a better parent and finally feel like you're doing it right. So many more things similar to that. We're going to go over all of it. We're going to have people like Ralphie from Simply On Purpose there. I'm going to be there. We're going to talk ADHD. We're going to talk about motherhood. It's going to be absolutely incredible. So I hope that you take full advantage of this deal. Obviously, you can sign up anytime until April, but sign up now. I really would love to see you there. I've already purchased my plane ticket. I'm already going out there. I'm already fully committed to this great event. And you deserve a good time. You deserve to be surrounded by other beautiful mothers who are going through it too. I have a feeling we're going to learn, we're going to laugh, we're going to cry, and we're going to bond. We're going to be there for each other. Head to universityformoms.com and sign up today. I cannot wait to see you in person. And it's okay also that if you're not feeling highly motivated to worship, like on the other side, the complete opposite of scrupulosity, if going to church on Sunday isn't one of your intrinsically motivating ideas, if getting the scriptures out isn't intrinsically motivating, if attending temple and worshiping there isn't intrinsically motivating, or even serving or putting yourself out there. Like, I don't mind teaching a classroom of 50 to 100 people, but sometimes knocking on someone's door and saying, hello, welcome to the neighborhood, we're happy you're here. That, especially since COVID, has really been hard for me. And so on the other end, it's okay if you're not motivated by that. But then you ask yourself, is this where I want to end? Is this the end result that I actually want? And just like, once again, doing the dishes, if I want to meet my neighbors, if I want to be a person who attends the temple, if I want to be a person who opens the scriptures more often, then I can expect my body to not produce motivation because it's not my number one interest, then how can I show up for myself better? My husband and I had an awesome conversation on our way home from our in-laws' dinner last night. And he said, I'd really like to go to the temple with you this month. And I said, I have made a goal to attend once a month, which is like quadrupling what I did last year, because I think it maybe went two or three times. And then he, knowing my all or nothing thinking, he understanding that it's hard for me to get to the temple because it's not intrinsically motivating yet, though I will say it is getting better. He was so good to say, Camden, I'd rather you go by yourself. And, you know, let me just give you permission, not like real permission. Obviously I can do whatever the heck I want, but let me tell you that I'm totally fine with you reaching your goal individually than you needing to figure out babysitter and payment for the babysitter or arranging with another family to watch the kids while we go together. So don't get too caught up on needing to do this together that you don't go by yourself. And that showed great progress for me, that he is understanding how my brain works better, because previously we would have done that. We would have been so focused on, well, we need to get a babysitter, that it either would have, you know, added unnecessary pressure and frustration to get there together, or I wouldn't have gone at all. And so he understood that because this was already kind of hard for me, it wasn't intrinsically motivating, that he wanted to encourage me to just go by myself. And then if it worked out that we could go together, fantastic. I hope this is making sense. So I just want to encourage you and remind you of your divine worth, your individual talents, that you are magnificently made, and that ADHD does not have to diminish the value of who you are because you're not as motivated as your neurotypical saint, as your neurotypical church neighbor. That has nothing to do with it. If you can learn to let go of the way that intrinsic motivation works for everyone else and find your own unique path to your discipleship and service, you're gonna understand your brain, and you're gonna be able to help others understand your brain so much more, and you're gonna see just how valid your worship is. As we close, I just want to remind you that when Christ called all of his apostles, he didn't call all of the scholars. He called people from all different walks of life with so many different talents that were motivated and interested in so many different things. I would imagine because he wanted to have a well-rounded nature of voices and of perspectives while he was traveling. He had tax collectors with him. He had fishermen. He had a zealot. He had somebody that was really good with money, and all different walks of life and perspectives on life. So don't diminish or discredit your perspective on your life just because how you feel about the gospel and how you motivate yourself to do things in your life doesn't come as easily as someone else's. Remember, because of your unhinged brain, you are able to be more like Nephi in Isaiah. A lot of the time, you're able to see how the dot to dots happen in the scriptures, and other people, that does not come as naturally. Remember that God has ways to speak with you and to interact with you in purposes and in music and in colors and in emotions that work in a different way so that he can get through to you in ways that other people can't, that may be more common or mainstream in society and maybe even in the church. And so your way of operating is just as valid and just as interesting. And I'm just really proud of you for listening to this episode. If you have any thoughts or ideas about interest-based learning, about having an interest-based nervous system, about learning how to motivate yourself to do things, let me know. Shoot me an email. I'd love to talk a little bit more to you about that. Remember that the Spirit is the greatest teacher, and the Spirit can touch our hearts in ways that intrinsic motivation can't. And so working with your skills, working with your understanding, with your wholehearted acceptance of who you are and with God is a beautiful combination. It is not bad. And I highly encourage you to communicate how you're feeling and how you work with your local leaders, with your presidencies, with others in your ward, in your work, in your neighborhood. I actually had somebody reach out to me this week and they told me a little bit more about themselves and what it's like to live as an introvert and how that maybe they don't always open their mouth and participate the same way that others in our church do, but that it impacts them just as beautifully and with just as much impact. And that helped me have a better view, a more accurate view of them. And the more that we're willing to get out there and to share and to inform, the greater we're going to come to understand each other as the body of Christ. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your positive reviews of this podcast. Thanks for sharing this podcast. My greatest intention and hope is to allow more people to see that there is plenty of room and plenty of space for all of them, that they can take up a lot of space in this church. And in fact, that's how it was always intended to be. So thanks again for sharing. Remember that I'm cheering you on and how much I love you. Thanks for listening to the Busy Brain Saint podcast. So glad that you're here. If you are interested in more information about ADHD coaching, head over to Instagram and follow me at Camden_ADHD. My company is called ADHD Directory. Or if you're also interested in following along with more Latter-day Saint ADHD material, you can follow me at The Busy Brain Saint on Instagram. Thanks so much for being here, and I hope I get to meet you soon. Take care.